missing their mucoid covering, which would say, oh, keep on the grinning side, ever on the grinning side, keep on the grinning side of Bob. The following is a live Ask Dr. Hal show. Last week's unfortunate rerun was the accidental result of not pushing the red button. The red button is now pushed. But just let me check it again. Oh, it's pushed all right. And so, let us push forward. The sea is calm tonight. The tide is full. The moon lies fair upon the straits. On the French coast, the light gleams and is gone. The cliffs of England stand glimmering and vast out in the tranquil bay. Come to the window, sweet is the night air. Only from the long line of spray where the sea meets the moon-blanched land, listen, you can hear the grating roar of pebbles which the waves draw back and fling up the high strand. Begin and cease, and then again begin with tremulous cadence, slow, and bring the eternal note of sadness in. Sophocles, long ago, heard it on the Aegean, and it brought into his mind the turbid ebb and flow of human misery. We find also in the sound the thought, hearing it by this distant northern sea. The sea of faith was once too at the full, and round earth's shore lay like the folds of a bright girdle furled. But now I only hear its long withdrawing melancholy roar, retreating to the breath of the night wind down the vast edges drear and naked shingle of the world. Come, my love, let us be true to one another. For the world, which seems to lie before us like a land of dreams, so various, so beautiful, so new, hath neither really joy, nor love, nor light, nor certitude, nor peace, nor help for pain, and we are here as on a darkling plain, with confused alarms of struggle and flight, where ignorant armies clash by night. And this is indeed the beginning. The beginning which implies an ending. and a continuity of the Ask Dr. Hal Show, live on radio. Greetings, dear fiends. October is here, and the season of circling spirits, of vengeful specters not properly laid to rest, of earthbound ghosts perpetually wandering in a fragmentary form, trying to unify their ethereal body and depart for the next event, whatever it may be, heaven, hell, or something in between. And tonight we expect to do the same show that we did last time, except that no one could hear, because there are two buttons here in this equipment, a red button and a blue button. And if the blue button is pressed, well, all the listeners hear is last week's show. And I knew this. I was all set. I set the board with the red button for me to press, but I, well, I forgot. And so it was an hour and a half into last week's show when I was sitting talking with K-Rob here, and I suddenly realized, Judith Christ, I didn't push the first slug in her red button. So I jumped up and did it, and the remainder of that was live show, but I'm sure I lost all of the long-suffering audience as they listened, puzzling it out, to the previous show. Well, that won't be this time, ladies and gentlemen, because I'm not going to create a new show for the first hour and a half. I'm going to use the show that I made for last week's show, including our opening recitation, Dover Beach, by Matthew Arnold. Matthew Arnold, you may know, was the son of Dr. Thomas Arnold, who was the head of Rugby School in England, the school that Tom Brown went to during Tom Brown's school days, the school that the evil bully, upperclassman Harry Flashman, was expelled from for being drunk. But perhaps all of this might as well be a description of ancient cuneiform writing, as far as our listeners are concerned. But other things are happening, percolating, bubbling, forming, taking on shape and becoming more evident, first through the edges and then toward the center of the noosphere. Because, as with all of these presentations, it is our intention to bring new things. And vile it were for some three suns to hoard and store myself, and this gray spirit, burning in desire to follow knowledge like a sinking star beyond the utmost bounds of human thought. How shall we continue? Well, here is one difference, although of course what we did was unheard, as we have just mentioned. We spent time answering questions which were mailed in, but now I hear that the station doesn't want to deal with receiving lots of letters addressed to me, Dr. Howland Owl, courtesy of, or carry of, care of this station. So I won't give the address out in this iteration of the show. But I might answer one or two that I already answered, and no one heard, but God and the devil, the infinite will that stirs and urges everything in the rebellious prince of darkness, and much good it may do each of them to have mentioned it. And also, I wish to give a shout out, just in case he might be listening, to the great, wonderful, and noble Michael Pepe. He wrote an angry letter to Puzzling Evidence on the Puzzling Evidence show last night. The problem there is that the studio at KPFA, which we are now once again doing live after a 3 or 4 year hiatus because of, COVID. The problem is they replaced all the equipment, and the board is difficult for Puzzling Evidence to operate until he gains some familiarity with it. And among the many appurtenances, there is the telephone. It will be possible to call at KPFA and to be a live presence on the phone, something which can't happen here, not through our equipment. There might be a way to do it, but the convolutions and the contortions that one must go through in order to do it do not interest your humble narrator. But that was the only reason he couldn't answer Pepe's queries. And he is welcome at any time to be on this show or on Relodio also, if that may be. Whatever our petty political differences, Michael Pepe is nothing less than a complete asset to any audio performance. And we will stand by that statement. I did push the button. I have pushed it. It should be going out. This should be going out. A certain neurosis now makes me wish to check again. See if that damn thing is pushed. And why have such a setup? It's like all these mad scientists have in their laboratories a lever which, if pulled, makes the whole thing blow up. Why install such a thing? But that's the way old Radio Valencia is. They have this infernal contraption. I'm just going to look in on it. Yes, the red button is presented, is pressed, and this show is going out. Out, out, perhaps way out. Out, out, brief candle. Life is but a walking shadow, a poor player who struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. I think I'll have some of this. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. The juice of certain herbs extracted from a spectrum of unknown plants and vegetation, collected by the famous Dr. Yogami, particularly the Marifasa luminosa plant. Of course, the negative effects won't happen to me, but if Puzzling Evidence drank it, I couldn't be answerable for the consequences. It causes certain people to transform, to grow extra hair, to drop down on all fours, to slaver and run under the moon. Which reminds me of a wonderful movie that was given a very positive review in the paper today. A horror movie, which is all seen from a dog's point of view. And they got a great dog to star in it, a dog named Indy, who does such a wonderful performance. And who wouldn't want to see a monster movie where the hero is a dog? I certainly want to see it. My sister, a great canine fancier, might even want to watch it, though not all that fond of horror tropes. Yes, putting on the dog, but I'm trying to think of the name of this picture. It's just out. It was reviewed by Mick LaSalle in the Chronicle. Is it called Good Boy or something like that? As in, he's a good boy. Certainly, the dog gets a wonderful review for its acting and for its entirety of contributions to the movie. And, of course, a dog can sniff out a monster often sooner than a human with our limited olfactory capability and our overcomplicated mind attending to matters not present or immediate. Thus, one can stumble into mishaps and take missteps that the faithful dog would never do. Although dogs can be absent-minded too, they're not superior beings, not entirely, not always, some of them are. There was it Rex the Wonder Dog? I can't remember who that particular famous dog was. I'm somewhat light on my canine history. And now, creeping upon us, like the cloud of rain which assaulted us the other evening, comes the shroud of despair and blackness. You need a special spray can to dispel it, or an incantation, and I have neither to hand. Can't put my hands on them. I do have other things here, though, as often is the case. Yes, October, when monsters walk the earth. And adults who should know better go trick-or-treating. I could answer these questions again. The problem is that I answered them last time, though nobody heard. But that is a barrier to doing the same thing twice in a row. It no longer possesses the zest of interest. Here's one from George. What's this last name? It's very hard to read. People write in cursive. They write in ballpoint pen. There's one I have from years ago, which was sent to KPFA from Compy Bob, but it proved very difficult to decipher. For this is... What does this say? It's for, the signature is like a pharmacist's scrawl. Well, perhaps I'll figure it out. Perhaps instead of staring intently at it, I will casually note it, and my subconscious mind will solve the problem as to who has signed this question, which came with the usual emolument. This is cash wrapped up in a piece of paper. Generally, we don't recommend that because often the wrong sort can tell that there's money in there and they just rip it open. On my online show, the Ask Dr. Hal show, the home edition, people send in money in some electronic digital way. I'm glad I don't have to do it or explain it. It goes directly into an account which is then shifted into my bank account, all electronically. So no tentacles from any hacker are in my source of money. Melander, that's the name, George Melander. Yes, I knew my subconscious mind would sort it out. And so can yours do for you. Just stop thinking about the fact that you don't know something, because you actually probably do. And once you change the subject to something else, you'll find your subconscious mind has prepared the answer. And that is how I answer many of my questions. And this one says, or appears to say, "Dear Dr. Hal, what is the largest molecule that forms part of a human body?" Yeah, that's a head scratcher, a melon scratcher, right? But of course, there is an answer. There is always an answer. Every question presupposes the existence of an answer. And often the answer lies inside the question and can be teased out, as during a dissection with a sharp knife or a pair of forceps, metaphorically speaking. So the largest molecule, one should stop thinking about the length of the small intestine and all sorts of things like that, because that is beside the point. I say, we say, yes, Dr. Hal Show says, that DNA has to be the largest molecule, or chromosome 1. Yes, DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid, which is what chromosome 1 is made from. Every normal cell in our bodies contains a pair of sets of 23 chromosomes. Well, there are a few specialist cells, like red blood cells, that don't. But each chromosome is a single molecule of DNA, something that isn't obvious when we see photographs of chromosomes or watch Jurassic Park, because the extremely long molecule is wrapped up around a kind of spindle, and that makes it look much shorter and bulkier than it really is through the friendly aperture of an electron microscope. And if you don't have one of those, no one gives two beans for you. The DNA that makes up human chromosome 1 forms the largest molecule. Is that the answer that you were expecting to receive? Do you ask something to which you already know the answer? Remember, you have the magical internet, which you can look everything up on. At the moment, I do not. I don't carry a computer around with me. When K-Rob was here last week, he brought in his computer, and he worked his magic as a guest. How fortunate I would be were he to visit another time this very evening, as the moon continues to wax. On the 6th of October, the moon will be full and superlatively bright. The moon shall rain out its beams, and heaven shall be overflowed. You know, that big molecule I was speaking of contains quite a few atoms. In fact, around 10 billion atoms, give or take a few. And it is a large molecule, but it is by no means the largest chromosome in nature. For example, wheat has a bigger one. That plant, it's about four times as long, something like that. You all know that DNA is described as a double helix, and that refers to the outer structure of the molecule, made up of long sections of sugars. Yes, sugar, nature's perfect food, a vital part of your interior essence. These long sections we call polymers, and they form the molecular backbone, linking these strands at regular intervals. Are the part which we consider important, the base pairs. Do I really need to list them? If I can. It's ACTH, right? You may remember that from your high school biology. That is to say, the C, for example, is cytosine. There's guanine, adenine, thymine. And the pairs always join the same way. C to G and A to T. And this means that when a cell reproduces by dividing, the DNA can split into two parts, each of which contains all the information needed to recreate the other half. Yes, it is, in effect, a family of molecules, a happy family, that act as data stores. Each base pair is the equivalent of a bit in a computer, though holding more information than some damn computer. And sequences of these biological bits, known as genes, act as the control codes for biological factories that chug and puff and produce essential molecules, which we call proteins. Thank you for your generous gift. And I should give out the address, but I've been told not to. Just this one time I won't. I shall the next time. And I'm going to put the rest of these aside. Essentially, I gave the same answer just there as I did earlier, but I felt a certain weariness while I was doing it of, haven't I already done this before? Must I be in the traces, going around and around like Samson at his wheel? You know, of course, the Philistines, the inhabitants of Gaza, put the blinded Samson from the Book of Judges to work grinding corn after they had blinded him. They took his sight in an interesting way by holding a red-hot blade of a sword near his eyes without touching them. The intense heat radiating from the almost molten metal was enough to cause him to go blind. Poor fellow. What he got for dalliance with Delilah. It must have been worth it. In the Cecil B. DeMille movie, that's Victor Mature. And Delilah, of course, is the enchanting, the beautiful Hedy Lamarr, who herself was not only a gorgeous movie star, but secretly a scientist, creating ingenious devices and even weapons of war for the U.S. government. Of course, in the movie, the king of the Philistines also likes Delilah. But she doesn't care for him. And so Samson pulls down the pillars of the temple. And, you know, spectacular destruction in the Cecil B. DeMille style ensues with the huge god of Chemosh or Chemosh, whoever it is who has the fire in the belly. The literal fire in the belly goes falling down, crushing all the glitteringly dressed Philistines, including their head, George Sanders. Oh, it gets Samson and Delilah, too. Everybody dies in the end. Just like in some Shakespeare plays, it ends with a heap of dead bodies. And isn't that what history also does? Ends with a heap of that kind. And not just a minor heap, a deep heap, a pile of damaged corpses. I was feeling somewhat grim last week. Then I cheered up when K-Rob came in. Then I gloomed down when I realized I hadn't pushed the button and had been doing a show that only Jehovah could hear. If Jehovah was listening. But like Santa Claus, it is said that he, the Ancient of Days, always is listening. He knows when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. There's a wonderful book, Robert Crumb's Book of Genesis. It is a masterpiece. And I recommend it thoroughly. A beautiful interpretation of this ancient text. But I noticed, while looking at it the other night, that the depiction of Jehovah is quite similar to the one that Crumb did years ago in the 60s in the one-page strip Mr. Natural Meets God. Yes, Mr. Natural goes to heaven, and God comes up to him and says, "Oh, Mr. Natural, it's so nice to meet you," and he pumps his hands, and he says, "What do you think of all this?" And he's looking at the celestial choir, the angels sitting on clouds singing hallelujah, and "How do you like it?" says God, and Mr. Natural says, "Well, yeah, it's all right, but isn't it a bit corny?" "Corny," says Jehovah, the thunder beginning to build up. "Well, the offshoot is, to make a long story short, Mr. Natural has to leave, and then later Satan comes to get him and says, 'Let's go, boss.' But Mr. Natural gets out of that one, too. The reason I'm mentioning it is that Robert's depiction of Jehovah in his Book of Genesis is quite similar to his depiction of Jehovah where Mr. Natural goes to heaven and meets him and gets thrown out. Strange, is it not? In the early books of the Old Testament, Jehovah appears as a very tall, striking old man, taller than humans, straight up with a long flowing beard and long white hair and white robes, and that's the way he used to manifest. Crumb illustrated all of this brilliantly, but in an introduction to the book, he said, "I don't actually believe any of this stuff. It's just too primitive." But he let his imagination go, and it is a wonderful work. I believe everybody should read it. It gives you insight into the Bible, which underlies Western culture and English literature. Excerpts from it were printed in The New Yorker and in Playboy. In fact, the same excerpt was printed in both magazines. A story not so familiar in Genesis, which had to do with much killing and genocide performed by the ancients in their day. Because that's what a lot of it was about. Chopping people up with swords, torturing them, destroying their homes, their children, their livestock, their families. One group would do it to another group, on, and then they'd have to get revenge. You know, they have to get revenge, and so by acting like such a hard case, you're simply kicking the problem down the road, and it will come back to plague your descendants. Look at the Balkans, where they're still angry about what happened in the Middle Ages. What do you suppose it's going to be like in Palestine? People aren't going to forget the outrages against them and the desire to get even, a powerful motivator. And so we turn from a disagreeable subject to perhaps a better one. As we range away from the problems of our tormented planet. As eve to purple turns the afterglow that lately with a rich and fervent red illumined the sunset skies, my feet are led by whispering spirits of the winds that blow at this gray hour, and many secrets know to where the oaks and pines meet overhead in plots to keep away the light. I tread beneath their archways, pensively and slow. Here darkening twilight is a sorcery whereby all things are rendered weird and strange. Bushes and trees fantastic shapes assume, and shadows lurk within the forest's range. Felt but unseen, for when I turn, they flee to darker depths of consecrated gloom. Clark Ashton Smith, of course. I need to memorize more poems of Mr. Smith. There is a chance, dear friends of the show, that K-Rob and I will be doing a live version of the nightclub act, but the end of the year is already going to be crowded with other events. I have much work that has to be done. Maybe we'll do such a show in early 2006. It would be at Scott Kuiper's place out on Monterey Boulevard, near the Balboa Park BART station. Not a hop, skip, and a jump from my door, as Radio Valencia now is. Radio Valencia, in turn, is intending to move from here to Mid Market Street, to a very disreputable area, in a run-down, beat-old building. A beat-up building, that sounds rather nice. That's what a radio station should be in. But what's not nice is the place surrounded by human wolves who prey on other humans. Like me, at least they would take me for a human and give me the same bad treatment. Michael Pepe himself was assaulted by these less than valid entities. And I have to ask, we were supposed to give extra money in our dues for something the station was going to do called Creek Migration. But surely that never happened. What creek? What migration? Did the creek rise? Did we migrate to it or past it? Or did we never set out for that liquid flowing creek? Is a puzzlement. Evidently. Yes, dear friends, the KPFA show, the Puzzling Evidence show, is back. It is on Friday. It is at 3 a.m. And it runs until 5, following Over the Edge. And we fully expect to have guests and other personalities join us there, as we have in the past. That is old, it's new again. The world's great age begins anew. The vanished years return. The earth doth like a snake renew her winter weeds outworn.
Widely spaced on an instrument board.
Right, right.
Heaven smiles, but and faiths so and empires gleam like wrecks of a dissolving dream.
So is there like a Sulu Chekhov kind of thing where you...
I suppose you can check off Sulu.
A brighter Hellas rears its mountains.
There was no competition.
From waves, like serener far.
And Wems the helmsman, right?
Right.
Like, yeah.
A new Peneus Sulu rolls his fountains against the morning star.
Do both of you push buttons, or is it just Doug who mans the board? And
well, I was more thinking of the transporter as we see it on the original series.
Oh, I see, Richard. Okay, gotcha.
You know, they have these big, bulky, colored lights and so on. And then the thing is like a slider that is operated, energizes.
Yeah, it's a three-lever slider.
Where fairer Tempe's gleam, so, there sleep young Cyclades on a sunnier deep. A loftier Argo cleaves the main, so no fraught with a later prize.
Until now, when I suddenly remembered the button and jumped up and pressed the red button.
A new Orpheus sings again and loves and weeps and dies. I need to refresh myself on that one. Where there sleep young Cyclades on a loftier deep, on a sunnier deep. Ah, well, Shelley, difficult to parse. A loftier Argo cleaves the main, fraught with a later prize. A new Orpheus sings again, and loves, and weeps, and dies. A new Ulysses leaves once more Calypso for his native shore.
Will soon be patched in through Super Robo Magnus Control. All the way from Science Headquarters.
We must defeat Elizabeth.
Those terrible toady monsters with the big tusks are coming this way. And here is a scene of businessmen gorging themselves on food.
Yes, that's rather disgusting. Just because a monster is coming, these well-off capitalists are chewing, gulping, and swallowing, just as the monster is doing outside.
For this Korean film, they farmed out Toei.
Yes, they're making a Korea out of
studio,
it.
Not Toho.
Toei is the, in my view, lesser of the Japanese monster studios. They produced Gamera, for example. Unlike Toho, which created Gojira. And gosh and golly, you can't do better than going back to the big G. They created other things that I find quite entertaining. Like the H-Man, for example. Yes, the H-Man. Otherwise known as the Human Vapor. A rather artistic monster movie from Toho. There's something intriguing about it, which brings me back to it.
No.
Hold on, let me take my shirt off. John, catch me if I fall. Dude, I'm dead.
You gotta hold me up for a second.
I can't.
You got this.
You got this, man.
He's gotta do that.
Ah. Oh my Christ.
Well, let's just get comfortable here.
Follow me.
I follow you.
I ain't folding now. Follow me.
I holler you.
No, I ain't holding out.
Rolling down something like going roll them out. Give me more than enough to go smile about.
Yeah, we got a show to do.
No new friends, no.
What you got? No new friends.
It does mean
yo. No new friends. Whoa.
When the sun goes down and when it comes back up.
Well, it's a poor workman who blames his tools, but I'm blaming them here at the station. Yes, I am.
Just assume that one of those is hooked up to me.
Well, it would be, I think, and we will soon know.
Wee, all the way home,
sit
eh?
Sit on attack, did you say?
No one
is telling you what to
sit
do
on attack. No.
Attack. What? Are your orders? Exterminate.
The monster is having some kind of psychological effect on my brain.
You will obey.
Those monsters, no?
Some kind of monster?
Well, that's what they call it anyway. I don't know what to call it. It's some kind of damn thing I'd never seen before. I couldn't really even describe it. It's just sort of a kind of a creature like a monster.
That's a horrible, monster, shapeless blob. Why don't you come out and say it?
A great big old monster.
Yes, it's big and it's old.
I remember. With monstrous head and sickening cry, and ears like errant wings, the devil's walking parody of all four-footed things. Is it not working? The hookup is not hooked up. Once with Radio Valencia we had this spaghetti-like tangle, but now it goes down through a hole.
Yes, the subterranean spaghetti monster, as opposed to the flying spaghetti monster, as that cosmos is constructed. The various deities of it begin to manifest themselves.
Now we're plugged in and ready to play.
We're tuned in, turned on, and ready to drop out.
You got around.
And all that sort of thing.
Here, what in the world? What,
equal
what?
Representation for the fatherships. It's sexist and discriminatory to just speak of these motherships all the time.
Well, that's true. Well, it may be true, but all I know is what I see, and when they came at me with that big gas mask and stuck it over my face, I breathed in, and I heard 1,000 orchestras and saw 1,000,000 different lights.
Did this mothership have a giant flapping chondrel, or was there something else that you could...
Now, let's not get too graphic. Let's stop this right here.
I cut off my shirt.
Yeah,
let me tell you, I went solo. Then, of course, there was that big, glistening, giant eye in the middle of their forehead.
Oh, I
that
really
great
dislike that.
Big bloodshot eye right in the middle of their foreheads. That's a typical sign that you've been... well, taken in.
I noticed something cyclops. About this giant eye. It never seemed to blink. It
they are giants.
Staring at you, you know, like maybe some sort of cheap
but
Hollywood prop.
There are larger things than that.
Be too uncomplimentary here. I thought it was well worth a dollar and very entertaining.
Oh, now I'm starting to get a little bit... I'm kind of getting there.
Looking at that eye, it was almost hypnotic.
How were you sure that you weren't hypnotized right there and then?
Well, I'm not sure. In fact, just thinking about it makes me more... hypnotic.
Listen to me very carefully. That's right. When you wake from the trance in just a moment, you will not remember my command. You will simply execute it.
Execute the command.
No, execute Dr. Hal.
Execute Dr. Hal.
No, no, you're not in rapport with Gibbofram. You're only in rapport with the sound of my voice.
Sound of your voice.
Bleep.
Can you feel my hand on your forehead?
Hand in my wallet.
Now withdraw $5 more and mail them to KPFA Radio, Berkeley, California.
No, that address no longer,
California.
The Subgenius Show opens in 1954 in a seedy part of New York City.
And so I've never ever seen anything like this. See,
a part of New York City where they play those obsolete CD discs.
Trying to go straight. He's got a job as an entertainer, which he takes dead seriously, and he's married to a woman named Rutabaga. Trouble escalates when Kirk becomes hooked on shooting pool. He says it's an incredible adventure.
As an intern in the terrestrial hospital at Ignar, I had charge of the singular case of Rodney Severn, the one surviving member of the Octave expedition to Yovombus. And took down the following story from his dictation. Severn had been brought to the hospital by the Martian guides of the expedition. He was suffering from a horribly lacerated and inflamed condition of the scalp and brow, and was wildly delirious part of the time, and had to be held down in his bed during recurrent seizures of a mania whose violence was doubly inexplicable in view of his extreme debility. The lacerations, as will be learned from the story, were mainly self-inflicted. They were mingled with numerous small round wounds, easily distinguished from the knife slashes, and arranged in regular circles through which an unknown poison had been injected into Severin's scalp. The causation of these wounds was difficult to explain.
Kind of like unless octopoidal bedrunkiana.
Believe that Severin's story was true and was no mere figment of his illness. Speaking for myself, in the light of what afterwards occurred, I feel that I have no other recourse than to believe it. There are strange things on the Red Planet, and I can only second the wish that was expressed by the doomed archaeologist in regard to future explorations.
Car at the Otto Show.
You led us to believe you had the problem solved.
Was very much.
So you're a subgenius, are you? Well, let's inspect your beautiful new home.
Because
as a subgenius, you'll be able to live in spacious modern housing like this, all built of jet-age plastic.
People,
every fiber, mere molecules thick.
My wife.
Here's the 200-mile Trail of Tears golf course.
Looking.
And you'll be splashing in the Olympic-sized, acid-filled swimming pool.
Yes, and it's real.
Here's
acid.
The shoe polish stand.
As a subgenius, you'll be entitled to benefits which last your entire lifetime, however long that may be. There'll be a place for the wife and the kids, not to mention the old folks, too. And it's all happening at Subgenius Acres and Condominium Terrace Golf Club.
Subgenius.
Sending.
Subgenius.
Subgenius. Subgenius, you can stand tall for what is right.
Subgenius elevators.
And sit down on your own stool as an American and a subgenius. Call today.
Sometime.
Somehow I don't think that really got through.
Why, that sounds like the notorious Yeri Jeff Caller.
Why don't we describe that date now?
Well, it was big, it was fat, it was ugly, it was obnoxious.
Hey, let's keep the personal remarks down for a change, shall we? Everything's going to be fine and fun on the show tonight. Whether or not we have any drop-in guests, I invited some, but there was no answer back. All right, there we go. A new Ulysses leaves once more Calypso for his native shore. Oh, write no more the tale of Troy, if death Earth's scroll must be, nor mix with Lyan rage the joy that dawns upon the free. Although a subtler sphinx renew riddles of death, Thebes never knew. another Athens shall arise, and to remoter time bequeath like sunset to the skies the splendor of its prime. To leave, if not so bright may live, all earth can take, all heaven can give. Saturn and love, their long repose shall burst, more bright and good than all who fell, than one who rose, than many unsubdued, not gold, not blood, their altar dowers, but votive tears, and some kind of showers. Oh, come on. Votive tears and symbol flowers, all right? That's more like it. Yes, the memory just needs a little jog now and then. And there's something else that I need, which I might just as well serve myself. I'm the only one here. Oh, cease. Must hate and death return? Cease, must men kill and die? Cease, drain not to the dregs the urn of bitter prophecy. The world is weary of the past. Oh, might it die or rest at last.
How does this happen?
Reflects small growing things from various parts of the body. Yes, inner and outer. Yes, your sweat glands aren't only getting rid of water and smelly crap. They're also feeding bacteria.
But that's all part of the great chain of being.
The population of worlds so small.
Yes, those miniature submolecular worlds that only Dr. Gabofram has experienced and explored.
You're that caller, and you want to be on last week's tape.
Turn that caller to the Golden Ram.
You could be the caller.
The thing about these miniature worlds that nobody seems to be tracking is that although if you can shrink yourself down somehow, you can go there. The smaller they are, the faster they go.
Hello.
And while you're at that size,
dinosaurs in front of you,
long lengths of time occur, and if and when you return to this plane of size, hardly any time has taken place, relativistically.
The Night of the Long Pipes is a rather sad episode in our history. We don't like to go over it, frankly.
But let's drag out the slide train.
Listen to the story.
Run it right
or just listen.
Now, here's the stormtroopers bursting into the pipe men's barracks. And,
the Night of the Long Pipes
is also interested.
This is a very well-staged historical recreation. These are the smaller collars, and then over here in the greater storage bins, we have the larger collar.
It's J.L. Smaller Collar and his friend George Larger Collar.
Diaper bag from the ship of the same name. Yes, it was a long time ago and very important.
Popular, hear me, little public? Nobody cares out there, I know, and that's the way it should be.
The story begins on page 2.
Well, they've put these giant headphones in here. They're ridiculous. They're for an enormous being, 15 feet tall. They're too big. They keep falling off my head. Oh, sorry. I'll just put them back on.
But his ice picking and a grinning did him no good as the giant ship bore down on his tiny craft.
into the strange world of the dinosaurs.
It did pitch and it did yell.
Well, bring that caller in now. Come on, call in.
Okay,
now.
We're gonna got some dinosaurs here.
Special caller and
then suddenly there was a trembling and a rushing and
you something.
Through the water.
What glorious creatures they are!
Anybody from Ohio out there? Come on, call in.
And gathering evidence to solve
and mighty King Neptune took his trident and shot right through that
gathering evidence.
Stain, where once there was an obnoxious little caller plaguing and